So this podcast, I like to say, is all about prevention. It's meeting with young people with inspiration and guidance and leadership with the LAPD. Welcome, everyone, to my podcast, Olympic and Bundy, Hollenbeck Pals. Oh, yeah. Okay, Hollenbeck Pals, let's introduce ourselves. Lorraine, since I've known you the longest, go ahead and start.
Thank you, Christine. My name is Lorraine Garcia, and I am the proud executive director of Hollenbeck Pal.
You've been there how long?
Well, Glenda and I, Officer Brooks, who recently retired 2 years ago, we actually started the nonprofit together. So I've been with her since 1999.
Okay, and we're going to get her on one of these days. Okay, 1999. Hollenbeck Pals does what? For those who may not know, who may not be from the L.A. area, Hollenbeck is one of our areas that LAPD has a division.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the Hollenbeck Pals are what?
Hollenbeck Pals is a youth program that is in Hollenbeck Division. So LAPD is broken up into 21 different patrol divisions, Hollenbeck being one of them. And so the Hollenbeck PAL program is Hollenbeck's youth program. We have various programs that we run. We have a diversion prevention program. We have a leadership and life skills program. And we also have a soccer program, both a spring and a fall soccer league that we run, and we are about to launch a career guidance program.
I love it. Okay, so for those people who are listening because it's a podcast, I'm sitting here with two LAPD officers in uniform. We should have you go ahead and introduce yourself and get your name.
Absolutely. My name is Officer Donald Levere, but everyone just calls me DJ, so
DJ
works
is.
Fine, yes.
And you've been with Hollenbeck PAL for how long?
I've been with Hollenbeck PAL for about 7 years now.
Okay.
I've been on the department for about 10 and a half years. And it's just an absolute blessing to be working
to
with
work
these
with
kids.
The kids.
Yes,
right,
absolutely.
Right. All right. And then we have a commander with us. Go ahead. I'll have you introduce yourself.
So I'm Al Labrada. I'm the commander with LAPD. I'm currently assigned to South Bureau. I oversee everything from the 10th Freeway down to San Pedro.
Okay.
I oversee five divisions. But for the last prior 2 years, I was actually the commanding officer at Hollenbeck, where I had the opportunity to see firsthand the great work that the program is doing with the youth. And I've got just under 28 years on with the department now.
Okay, so you all know what you're doing, basically. You've been out long enough to know what you're doing. I've always loved Hollenbeck. When I first moved to Los Angeles as a news anchor here at Fox 11, I spent a bit of time with Hollenbeck, so I do know it well. And I think that you run one of the probably best PAL programs, because PAL programs, are they nationwide, Lorraine?
Yes. There's about 330 chapters nationwide and about 125 just in the state of California.
Okay. And I like to think that you're one of the best. Am I right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I will agree.
Yeah. Okay. That's
agree.
We're all
we
jumping
like
on
so.
That
we
one.
We like to think
yeah.
so also.
And how so, DJ?
Number one, I think it starts with every single person on our staff sincerely loves what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is in it for the children. Everyone is in it for the youth. Majority of us grew up in the area or in similar areas as our kids. So, you know, everyone on our staff can really relate to the kids that we're working with in the area.
So, Commander, why do you like doing this, working with the kids?
Well, you know, I'll stress the passion that he spoke of with the staff there. It's just incredible. In the 2 years I was there at Hollenbeck, I was able to see it firsthand. But not only that, but that community in Boyle Heights surrounding that area as well is such a community in need. You know, it's an area that youth are unfortunately targeted by gang members for involvement, for participation. We've had a large number of incidents, even the 2 years I was there, of juveniles being involved in violent criminal acts at the age of 13, 14 years of age. And a lot of that is attested to the fact that they don't have a lot of things going on. Maybe the parents are working two jobs to try to make ends meet. And those kids are learning on the streets. So I saw firsthand the work. Myself, I came into this country as an immigrant. So I came here at the age of six. I grew up not too far from this area in
came
Highland
from?
Park. Mexico.
Okay.
And back then, you know, we didn't have programs such as this. So at least I didn't know of any programs like this. And I was fortunate that I was able to grow up with strict rules from my mom. But having been on the department for just under 28 years, I see the struggles that many parents have to find some, especially low-income families, opportunities for their kid to learn about leadership programs. And more importantly, those kids that are falling in the wrong hands, you know, what direction do we guide them? And this program has done that.
Okay, so at what age do you start with the kids?
It really just depends on the program that they're coming in for. So our soccer program starts at 3.5, 4 years old.
Oh, little ones.
And on up to 17.
So I know I've talked in the past with others about that introduction to law enforcement for young people, and so many want it to be a positive experience. That first time you ever see an officer, it's a positive experience. And Lorraine, you're doing that.
Absolutely. And so part of the reason why we exist is specifically for that. We know a lot of our kids, and I was one of those kids that for whatever reason, we were afraid of the police, right? And we thought of them in such a negative way because we only see about them being arresting.
I still get intimidated when I see an officer. You know?
We do too.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
And so, you know, being able to create programs where officers are part of the program and these kids get to see them in a whole different light and their parents has changed them completely. And we're talking about not just for that moment, we're talking about for generations, because we have kids that we worked with for over 20 years and we already know some of them that have families now, just the way that they're grooming and raising up their kids about respecting, you know, officers. And I know the impact that they've had working with the officers that we've had over the years. They're so proud to know them.
So you have the soccer program. What else?
So we have our Life Camera Action Program, which is our life skills and leadership program. And so that program uses digital media.
Sign of the times, very current.
And the purpose is that is for we want our kids to really kind of tap in and tell their stories. So we want them to be comfortable with who they are and what's important to them without them realizing that they're gaining so many skills that they're going to be able to use in their future. So they, you know, all of them have to create their own little I stories on something that's important to them. And then as a group, they do a community project. And so something that they feel is important to talk about, but from a kid's perspective.
Well, you know, I do the Wednesday's child adoption segment. And what one thing that we try to do also is let kids know that it's okay to own your story, that you're not alone with your story, and that by telling your story, perhaps you can find some tools and people that can be of support with you where you're at, to not be embarrassed by your story. It is what it is, so what can we do with that? So, Commander, do all of the LAPD divisions have a PALS program?
No, not as robust as this.
I know, like I said, one of the best.
And I don't have any bias towards it because I was overseeing, working alongside them for the last 2 years. But no, there are other programs, you know, in the Valley, 77th has one as well. But the growth of this one, really, the involvement from many organizations to support it, you know, is significant. Most recently, they were able to launch the diversion program of diverting children that have been detained or possibly being arrested for charges. Mm-hmm. Instead of putting them in the criminal justice system, we sent them to the program. And they're actually having a graduation coming up soon.
Because when is that?
On August 22nd.
Okay.
And so we have 53 families that are successfully graduating. So we had 63 that entered the program, 52 are graduating, so that's like an 85% success rate.
Oh, my gosh.
And of those kids, 20 of those kids were on formal diversion.
So, Commander, how does that work? There are kids that would have had some kind of discipline otherwise?
Well, criminal charges. So there's charges that apply. We couldn't obviously put them in if they're arrested for weapons violations, you know, attempted murder, violent criminal acts such as robbery and so forth. But if they commit a crime such as vandalism, burglary, theft, there's a lot of charges that they can actually get programmed instead of going to jail or getting to a juvenile facility or even getting probation. Because we all know once they get into that system.
Yes, I was just thinking,
you know,
that.
And, you know, we've had an opportunity to – I've had the opportunity to sign off some kids that were kind of questionable as to whether we should divert them. But we were able to push it in that direction. And these kids have moved forward. And they learned that this was a second chance opportunity that they may never have gotten if they were in the juvenile justice system.
Oh, that is amazing, to break some of that pipeline to the prisons, you know, going through that juvenile hall. That's really making a difference. DJ, you got to feel great about that.
Absolutely. It is a blessing to do this work, you know, in the first place.
So.
And then it's a blessing just to know that, you know, we're all a part of, you know, what could be such a huge change. You know, just the simple act of these kids acquiring a booking number really, you know, has the potential to damage their future when it comes to getting jobs, when it comes to applying for any type of assistance, when it comes to applying for colleges, you know. So the fact that we can give these kids a second chance to do all of that and just to exist, you know, just to be, just to live out a, you know, a normal, healthy life. It's amazing to know that, you know, we're a part of something like that.
Well, we all have our personal stories, and I had a foster brother, and I remember our first encounter with law enforcement was him being arrested for vandalism. And so it went to a juvenile program from there, and then he went on to incarceration. So I do know the story well with the young people that you're working with and how we're fighting so hard to build their self-esteem and encourage them and show them that there are other ways and other programs in life that will propel them forward. So besides the diversion program, what else?
Well, I'd like to really stress, and I think we touched a little bit on the trust portion of this. You know,
yes.
It, you know, historically, and you know, growing up on this department, you know, for the last 27 years, there's been not a lot of trust, not only within the communities of color, but more importantly with the youth. And I've seen that firsthand. Yes, because the way we did things, it's the way we policed our communities, and that's a significant struggle for us. Because you know, if we have our youth that are growing up to be future, you know, members of this, you know, community, leaders in this community, and they don't trust us as youth because their parents had negative interactions with us, then that's not a positive way for us to start. Mm-hmm. And for us to be able to show them firsthand as part of this program and other programs that we do want to make a difference in their lives, we want to, you know, help them have a better life, as DJ has said, then I think it's a positive way for us to try to improve and increase that trust.
Yeah. Lorraine, you were going to say?
Yeah, and if I can just say one thing about it, I do want to thank Commander Labrada because, you know, through his leadership, we were given this opportunity, but he really spearheaded from the department side to get his officers and his command staff to really buy in and understand and put some really great things in place. That's why we're already being successful.
Because we should note, because you're a nonprofit, you're not necessarily a part of the city or a government program. You're a nonprofit, and you partner with law enforcement.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm thinking, too, you talked about, Commander, that first encounter with law enforcement. I have another foster sister who she said once, "I hate the police." I said, "Girl, get in the car." And so we went down and got cookies and took them down to Pacific Division. And she got a ride along because I wanted to change that perspective of how she viewed law enforcement. I'm sure she must have had some kind of history to feel that way or to think that way. But at least I wanted to show her, well, I have a different philosophy. Come check it out. And then you can maybe balance your perspective. So DJ, you had to have been, as an officer, on the streets like any other police officer first.
Yes.
Right. This is a big change for you.
You know, coming on to the department, I always had a goal of working with the youth in some capacity. So although, yes, it's a change from working patrol, right, to very different capacities, it's one that I've always wanted, and it's one that I've always seeked out. So it's not like it was some sort of, you know, big culture shock, or it's not like I was put here, you know, because for any reasons or not by choice. I wanted to come to work with the youth. So,
dream,
you know,
job.
It is. Yeah. It really is. Because, you know, getting through to these kids to me personally is worth more than, you know, any arrest that I could make out in the streets.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, kids want to come to you? How does that happen, especially if you're with a community that sometimes is fearful of police or has certain feelings toward police? How do you get the kids to be interested in this?
So really, it depends on the program as far as how we get the kids. So for programs like our soccer program, our Life Camera Action program, we go out and we actively recruit. We have relationships with majority of the schools in our area and, you know, in the immediate area of Hollenbeck, but we go out and we go into the classrooms and we recruit and we go and we talk to the kids and we're there. So it's not just a poster that they're seeing, you know, and saying, you know, oh, okay, that may sound interesting. We go out and we put a face, you know, behind the program. We put a face behind that poster. So we go out, we actively recruit. And a lot of times, once these kids get to know us, they get to know who we are, they get to interact with us, you know, they figure, oh, okay, I guess they aren't so bad. and so, you know, that's how we actively recruit for our programs such as that. And so when it comes to our Get It Straight program, that is more of a referral basis.
So that's not the diversion program.
That's part of it. The program they get sent to. Obviously, if they're in a diversion, the alternative is to go into incarceration or to be, you know.
So who wouldn't take that?
Right.
But
unfortunately, some of the kids do drop out. Unfortunately, it's sadly. Not as many, but there still are a few that do not choose to stay in the program.
But just the fact that they have that option, I mean, who wouldn't seize that and at least, you know, grab onto that?
Second chance.
And we do have a large number of kids in that Get It Straight program, which is the program that the diversion kids go through, that although they may not come initially voluntarily, you know, but they were referred to us either by school deans, principals, counselors, just parents. Sometimes the parents will, you know, come to the front desk. They'll bring their kids to the front desk of the station just because they're at wit's end.
I know that story. I know that family story.
Yeah, okay. They just don't know what to do, you know, with the kids. But the kid hasn't necessarily, you know, committed a crime. Yeah. And so our front desk officers will refer them back to us. And the kid doesn't want to be there initially, but once they get to, you know, interact with us, once they go through a couple of weeks of our program, they end up going all the way through the program. And at that point, it is voluntary.
How long is the program?
So the formal program is 12 weeks. There's a 12-week program that's mandatory for the parent and the child to attend.
Oh, the parent too?
Yes.
Oh.
And then simultaneously, we run a parenting program that's 10 weeks long. So the child is coming once a week, the parent is coming twice a week, because we really choose to attack this from a family angle. You know, we're not able to fix anybody. We're not able to, you know, perform any magical acts. But we just want to educate our families and really give them the tools to, you know, to mend whatever it is that's broken in their homes. But the real game changer is the fact that even after that 12-week, you know, formal program is over, we keep not just the kids, but the families on our caseloads from 6 years up to a year if needed. So there's continuous follow up. There's continuous feedback. There's continuous support. Because I would like to say, I wish I could say we're good enough to keep you for 12 weeks and then everything is, you know, better. But we continue to keep them around, keep following up, you know, we will pop up to schools and, you know, say, hey, how's everything going? We'll, you know, do home visits. But those parents and those youth have that continued support for us for a long time.
So go ahead, Lorraine, you're going to say?
So, yeah, we want to, you know, we're taking a holistic approach. So what we want to do is we want to kind of find out what is this family dynamic look like and what are those protective factors in this family and what are the ones that maybe causing some of these things that these kids are making choices. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we ask for them to stay at least 6 months. The ideal is to keep them for a year, but we figure if we say 6 months, we have a better chance of them staying with us. And then they agree to stay pretty much the whole year. And the great thing about that is when you ask, like, you know, how do we get these kids? You know, I know the most important thing is that first counter, right? When you first interact with somebody, your first impression is going to be the lasting impression. So like DJ had mentioned, you know, we have a great staff that are very culturally, you know, diverse, and they sincerely care. And then parents know that, and kids know that. Kids know how to read adults. Kids know when you're doing it just because you have to, and kids know that when you're doing it because you care. And that's the difference, is that each of the staff members sincerely care. Each of them, nobody's in there to try to point out what things are doing wrong. It's just, how can we help? And let's educate you so that you can make better decisions, so you're informed. And so when we launched, we wanted to do something even more. So in 2016, we partnered with USC. And so we...
Yes, this is new.
Yes.
This is new. I want to hear all about this.
So we created...
This is big.
So we created the first law enforcement social work teaching institution. So
okay,
far in the country.
Stop. The first law enforcement social work
teaching institution.
And it's part of Hollenbeck Pals?
Yes.
Okay.
So what that means is for most people, you know, when you talk about seeking out mental health services or going to see a therapist, the first thing people think, oh, you know, something's wrong with me, I'm crazy. And so I wanted to break that stigma, and I wanted our kids to not feel ashamed to talk to somebody, because what they're experiencing, you know, is going to affect them, and what their parents have experienced. And, you know, in our culture, we don't really talk about that stuff.
Although in this day and age, we're talking a whole lot more about mental health.
Right.
So this is right in line with, I think, the current trends. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I do have to say, the great thing about creating this teaching institution is that we're able to provide therapy for our families. And so we don't have to hand off these families and hope that they'll go somewhere else and make a connection. You know, we've worked with them. They trust us. And so being able to have the interns that we have from USC be able to provide the therapy, and now we have staff members that are either social workers that have their master's degree in social work or their master's degree as a MFT, so as a marriage and family therapist. So within the next 2 years, we plan to have all of our staff for this particular program have the ability to do both case management and direct therapy.
So officers, are you two involved with that part of it, or is that kind of a separate wing of Hollenbeck PAL?
Well, go ahead. Well, I am not doing the therapy.
He's taking.
Yes, but our officers are involved in each one of our programs. So everything, so like myself, and then I have a partner, Officer Jeff Norrett. We don't go out on patrol every day. Our day-to-day activities revolve around our PAL programming. Mm-hmm. So we are embedded in everything that Hollenbeck PAL does.
Okay.
Commander? And I think that's what makes it much more successful on this end, because they've already established that trust with the families. They've established that trust with the kids. They already trust them to an extent that they're willing to follow direction on some of these programs, and especially if they come across children that might need some other help. Whereas if we kind of refer them to outside, they might kind of close that door, because now they don't have a relationship with those folks.
You got to start over with somebody new.
Yeah. And then there's not, trust, you know, and this is already families that aren't really trusting of social services and community groups and law enforcement. But here we've already established that relationship, that trust. Let's continue, like Loren said, to be a one-stop shop to try to help all these families.
That's amazing. That is really a great service.
Yeah, we're really proud of that, because we're seeing the results. We're my hope was that our families would start looking at it differently, and so would our kids. But they're in it, so mm-hmm. there's no hesitation to see these young boys come in for therapy, to see these parents willing to really talk about things that traditionally you just don't talk about those things. Yeah. And for the girls, it's amazing. And to see their lights turn on in their eyes, you know, because a lot of times they come in and they're not even looking at you. Mm. And then just to see that change in them, that they believe that they can do anything.
So how does the program work?
So the kids that are either that are walkthroughs from the station, or kids that are referred to us through the schools, or actively when our case managers are out in the community at different resource fairs, the first thing is we want to do an intake. So we want to make sure that we're the right fit for them.
Okay.
And so whatever is going on and that they're comfortable telling us, that we believe we can help them. And then, so we do that with the parents, and we do that with the kids separately. And then we do a full assessment. And so we really want to look at all those factors that surround this child and this family. And we work with the family. So that's our approach, is that we want to work with the family, because we know these kids may have all the intentions to want to maybe do things or do differently, but if their parents are not in there with them, mm-hmm. there might be some limitations.
So, Commander, I want to ask you this, because being law enforcement, being LAPD, you're often the ones that are making the arrest. It's almost too late. Damage has been done. So how much do you think this mental health care is going to make a difference with youth growing up?
Well, I think it's significant. It's just one of the challenges we face, and I think we spoke about it, how now it's kind of the sign of the times, what we're dealing with mm-hmm. on many levels, adults and youth as well. I mean, it's a necessity of what we need to be able to offer. And we as police officers can offer that. We're not social workers, and we're definitely not clinicians or psychologists. And for us to be able to have a direction to point some of these youth, to get them in the right direction, give them that little push to kind of go in the right direction so they don't fall, you know, in the wrong side of the road, if you will, I think is helpful to us. And that's individuals and youth that we're not going to look into the incarcerating or putting them into the justice system, because they're receiving the services and help they need.
So, Lorraine, is this based on another program, or how did this all come about?
No, it was something that I got in. So I reached out to one of the professors who I knew and met, you know, in 2002 when she was working for a school. And I inquired about being able to have maybe one intern or two. And I wanted them to support our diversion program. And then for some reason, a colleague wanted to come and present to me about a teaching institute that they have, and they mainly have them in schools and in hospitals. And when she presented, I said, I want to do that. I want to be able to have a bigger impact and have more social work interns to be able to embed them in all the programs that we do. And so I was given the template and filled it out, had my staff look at it, and pitched the idea to this professor, who pitched it to her dean at USC, and they accepted it.
I love this idea, and I'm thinking that I know with law enforcement, you have mental health and social workers that you can call out to go out on a call with you. Am I right?
Yes, our mental evaluation unit.
Okay, but this is a whole different thing. This is a kind of a meeting the needs before an arrest kind of thing, meeting the needs early on, we should say, right? And prevention, yes?
Yes, yes, okay. Absolutely. You know, you kind of realize when you really get into working with these kids that these kids at super young ages, 6, 7, 8, 9, they are dealing with trauma that adults aren't even equipped to deal with. And so being able to have these, you know, these social workers, these MSWs there with us, I mean, it's absolutely huge, because it's addressing something that as parents, you know, even with your own kids, you know, sometimes you don't realize things as trauma. You don't, you know, in the moment, a lot of these parents, these schools, the teachers, they look at these kids as bad kids. And a lot of times they're not bad kids. They're just dealing with things emotionally that they don't know how to deal with.
Yeah.
And so being able to offer a service where, you know, we can help them work through that and help teach them how to make, you know, better choices and how to better cope with everything that's going on in their lives is huge.
I'm thinking of my own foster brother, adoptive brother, who had been born to a teen mother who was incarcerated with a history of heroin abuse, then been bounced around to a couple foster homes, removed from the grandmother. I mean, the trauma that young kid came at 8 years old into our home, was that trauma had already happened. And the things that I feel now as I look back, and I think this is why I work with kids as much as I do and young people, is I wasn't able, as you know, a sibling, to be of help to him and comfort to him. I didn't know what to do. And so now I never want other kids to feel the sadness that he felt. And so you're dealing with some of that reality.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going back to that discussion on the mental evaluation and that help, you know, we have a strong mental evaluation unit with the department. But historically, that one, you know, we have a clinician that drives around with an officer and responds to incidents of people that require assistance, you know, with mental issues. And that, to that point, you know, we don't want the children to get to that point. That's an individual that's probably a danger to self, danger to others, maybe harm themselves. And at that point, you know, they're going to probably, you know, be taken to a psychiatric facility for additional treatment. But like DJ said, you know, there's a lot of kids here. And I've had an opportunity to work with our cadets, you know, formerly our explorers. And some of these kids, you know, like you said, are one parent. Some of the parents maybe have been incarcerated. Maybe they're victims of crime within their family. Some of them were sexually abused. Maybe some of them were victims of seeing what the effects of drug, and some of them just saw the trauma that exists in some of these low-income communities with the violence. So that's what this program is for. It's not kids that are going to be, you know, housed in a psychiatric ward, but children that need help that we as officers can't provide. We can't give them direction, and a lot of times they don't want to talk to us. But being able to open the store, having that support for somebody who's a professional to be able to direct them, alongside you got DJ working with him on the sports program or other mentoring programs for leadership, then it's a win-win for that child.
I'm thinking bullying, too, is such a big issue in this day and age.
Yes, a huge issue. As a part of our Life Camera Action program, we allow the kids in the class to pick a topic that is just near and dear to their heart, something that immediately affects them, their household, their community. And we produce a PSA. We allow them to, you know, write the script. We allow them to, you know, just produce it. We allow them to kind of, you know, pick their actors, pick who the director is, and it's really their vision. And then myself and my partner in that program, Ignacio, we guide them and we help them put it all together, but it's really their vision. And you'd be amazed at how often bullying comes up. Yeah. It's you know, something that is just extremely prevalent in the schools.
You know, I do a fair amount of these podcasts, and I work with a group called First Star. They work with kids in foster care, getting them all groomed through high school to go to college. And I'm thinking they work with these kids for 4 solid years. Your time directly is fairly short, yes?
Yes, but we do try to get our kids involved in the other programs that we offer, because our goal is to try to keep them as long as we can, so that we can make sure that whatever outside influences that were first really impacting them, that we've kind of eliminated that. And then we want to make sure that if we don't offer those programs, that we're connecting them with others.
Well, I was going to ask you, where do you see that you're making a difference? How do you see that?
Well, I can answer for the department.
All right, Commander, take it.
we can see, obviously, we've seen a significant amount of reduction in gang violence in our city. It's not from arresting people. You know, it's really? through opportunities that some of these youth have had. Obviously, there's programs that we didn't historically have when we had a significant amount of gang violence here in the early 90s, even the late 90s and early 2000s. So a lot of these programs, I think, has helped a lot of the youth to find other opportunities. But more importantly, it's helped us kind of guide those that normally would have been an additional statistic in our crime stats to go to other programs. So to me, to measure that, and I always tell the officers when I spoke to them in roll calls, if we could save one of five children, then that's a win. Yeah. Because that's one child that we're not going to incarcerate, or we're not going to have to go take in an ambulance because they were just injured by a gunshot. Mm. So it's a win-win, the fact that, you know, children are being saved daily by this program.
Wow, that was strong. Okay, let's wrap up the podcast on that one. No, I'm just kidding. Lorraine, I want to, because you've been with the program from the start, I want to hear a story from you that tells you that this is working.
Well, maybe if I could tell a couple stories. So yeah. One of our first kids, you know, he came from a great family, but he just really didn't have that belief, self-belief. Mm-hmm. And so he went on to graduate. We had a mentoring program when we first started, and we matched him with somebody who happened to be a friend of the chancellor for UCLA, and that was his dream college. And so this chancellor met with him, told him what he needed to do, advised him to go to East LA College and to do extremely well. So he had a seat, you know, coming in, and he followed everything he said. Wells Fargo was intrigued by this young man, said, we want to offer you an internship when you complete. He completed that. They offered him this internship, and then they created a position for him.
Oh, fantastic.
He left Wells Fargo to pursue his MBA and got it at MIT, and he's one of our board members.
Okay, wrap up the podcast now. No, DJ, you get your turn. You get your turn.
Oh, man, how do I follow that up? No. I think for me personally, seeing the – what allows me to really see the impact that we make is it's not always the big stories, but it's when you don't see a kid for a couple of years and they come back and, you know, they're like, I graduated high school. You know, just it's the little things to me, you know, hey, I got a job. I was able to save money and buy a car, where when that kid first came to us, that stuff just wasn't, you know, that stuff just didn't seem like it would be in their future. Mm-hmm. And so to know when a kid comes in and they're sharing this with us, and they're not just sharing it with us to brag, but they're sharing it with us to let us know that we were a part of that and that we helped, you know, make that change. Some of our kids, you know, come and they thank us because they were the first in their family, out of their siblings, their parents, to graduate high school or, you know, to do some of these things. And so those are kind of the stories that really allow me to know, you know,
yeah,
that's the impact that really touches me.
Mm-hmm. But what about Jonathan?
Who's that, Jonathan?
Jonathan is a kid that we had who, when he came to us, he was, you know, he was in it. He was entrenched. He was selling drugs for the gangs. You know, he may not have been claiming a particular gang, but, you know, he was as deep as someone who was, you know, claiming the particular. He didn't know how to get out. And, you know, he came to us and
He hadn't gone to school for like 2 years.
Right.
So he was really far academically.
And there was something about him, though. You know, some of these kids, you can tell that, okay, they want out. You know, they want a regular, you know, life. But sometimes the environment doesn't allow that. It's hard for them, especially once you're in.
Yeah.
Then it's even harder, you know, mm-hmm. to get out than it would have been to stay out in the first place. And so he came to us and he was, you know, very, very hesitant, as obviously, right, you know, doing everything that he's doing and then coming into a program that is, you know, run by law enforcement. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he stuck with us. And, you know, we won him over on a more of a personal touch. You know, the ones who come in with the hardest little, you know, shells, with the thickest masks, they're the ones that end up being our best friends at the end of it. So, you know, after a while, he was just always in our office. He was always there. He was helping us out. You know, he enjoyed being around us. We enjoyed him being around. And, you know, eventually he graduated high school. He came back and told us that, you know, hey, I bought my first car, you know, and but he bought his car the right way. you know, and that's what the big thing was. You know, he got out. He made the choice to get out and to stop doing what he was doing. And if I remember correctly, you know, he didn't just, you know, hide out or run away. You know, he made the choice to get out. He confronted the, you know, the people that he was, you know, doing what he was doing with. And it wasn't easy, but, sure. You know, it was a choice that he made. And so we were so very proud of him.
Courageous
for that.
Young man.
Within a year, he made up 2 years of school. So he committed to do all the hard work and...
Dynamic young person. Okay, so because you're a nonprofit, I assume that you only have so much funding that comes from grants or the government?
So we work really hard to apply to as many grants as we possibly can. And then we do two fundraisers, one that you were involved in.
I've been there, yes.
And that's our annual gala. And then we have a fun event that we do. We get people to agree to be falsely arrested and raise their bail.
Which is coming up here in October.
So someone has to be falsely arrested and then call all their friends to
bail them out.
Yes, to raise their bail.
Car and handcuffs and all that?
So we do whatever that participant wants. So we've done exactly that. There's been incidents where, you know, the person that has agreed to be a jailbird, we call them, didn't tell anybody in their office. And so when DJ and Jeff have come and say, we're looking for this person, and even though they bring a fake wanted poster and it's a silly wanted poster, they're just memorized by their what they're wearing and just the words that they say, and they're covering for their bosses because they have no idea. They're, that person's not here. And
oh my gosh.
It's fun.
Okay. All right. So you fundraise. How else can people get involved if they want to be involved?
We'd love people to come and donate their time because we know sometimes monetarily they can't give. And I think that's important for us, you know, is to have the right people that want to give of their time, because we try to stress that to our kids. You know, somebody has given of their time. And so you want to, in order to pay back, you know, think about doing that. Think about coming and affecting
speaking
somebody.
Speaking or helping out.
Yes. Speaking, helping out.
Yeah. Okay. What else do you need?
Well, messaging out about the impact of the program, I think, is important, and getting the message out. But more importantly, guiding those kids that might need that help, I think, is important. Because I think a lot of families, I think somebody said it earlier, is a lot of times they walk into the station grabbing their child. They say, I can't control it anymore. What do I do? And, you know, we're not going to put them in jail for that. We're not going to stick them in handcuffs and take them to the back and scare them. Let's find a program for them. And this is the program. And this is why I'm trying to bring the program down to South L.A., because there's a great need for that now. And in South L.A., there's a lot of young children there that are one parents, or maybe some of the parents are incarcerated. So having that message out that program exists is very helpful.
So Hollenbeck is intact. Now you want one in South L.A.
Yes.
And what about around the nation? Do you see programs like this with this kind of strength?
There are a few. So I have to give credit to the New York PAL, because they're the ones that started over 100, and I think it's 104 years now.
Oh, okay.
And so they're
history.
Very strong.
Yeah.
Yes. And some of the smaller cities that, you know, the mayors and the city council are behind it, because it's not such a large entity. And so they're, as far as funding-wise, they're able to create some stuff. But I think what we try to do is be change with the times, right? Be innovative. Be open to hear, and be open to listen to other people, and not think that this is the only way. And every year we look at things and we say, you know, did we do everything right? Can we improve? Where can we make some improvements? And when you ask, like, how else can somebody help? We know that we live in a beautiful city, and that there's so many generous people. So if anybody's looking to donate money and they want to do it in a great cause, I believe that we're the cause that...
And with your other program with the mental health and the teaching that way, didn't you take a trip?
Yes. So
is there a big trip we should talk about?
Yes. We had the fortunate, we were very fortunate to be able to present at a national conference, but this was an international conference in England. And so we had about 17 different countries that we were able to present, and they were all very intrigued in this particular work that we're doing. And so they've asked us, every time we've presented, and we've been able to present about 5 times, they ask us if we'd be willing to either go and create that there, or if there's any job openings, they'd love to come and work with us, because there's nothing like that out there.
And it was you and Officer Brenda Brooks.
So it was myself, Officer Brooks, and then the two professors that are the supervisors for the TI. Mm-hmm. So there's some criteria within the Teaching Institute that need to be in place, and that's having somebody either on staff that's a licensed social worker or has their doctorate degree. And so right now we're contracting that with USC to be able to have our Teaching Institute exist.
Well, I love this podcast, Olympic and Bundy, which is here in West LA, Fox 11. And I love that we have this time to really let what you all are doing breathe, to talk about it. I love that you're being noticed internationally. That's fantastic. So we're about to wrap it up here. So I wanted to ask you all to give me a final thought, something I didn't ask, or if you want to sum up something about Hollenbeck Powell, or whatever thought you feel like you want to put out there as we wrap up the podcast. And who wants to start? You can volunteer if you got the thought. Anyone?
I'll start.
Okay, Commander, go ahead.
Investment in our youth is one of the significant challenges we face. You know, here in law enforcement, we know we do what we do of identifying criminals and addressing those issues. But investment in our youth is significant, and we need everybody's help on this thing. Parents, nonprofits, and more importantly, support of this great program that's already been proven and has shown to help a lot of kids. And so I ask for everybody's support in continuing to invest in our future, because that is what it is. Our youth are our future.
Well, honestly, as much as I've known about you all, Lorraine, and seen you all and been to your event, I didn't really know as much as I learned in this podcast tonight. So I'm excited to get this out. All right, who else has a thought?
Well, I just want to say, you know, I think it's important for us that are out there trying to make a difference in a child's life, that we really look at bringing in as many partners as we can, and not think that if we do this alone and if we did this collectively, the bigger impact that we'd have.
Yeah. All right. I'm thinking two people can always be a guest speaker or volunteer at your benefit, set up chairs, take down chairs. Do a silent auction, things like that?
Yes.
Yeah. Ways to donate that way. All right, DJ, I guess you got you're going to bring us home here.
Man, I should have went first. No, you know, I think my main thing just personally is it takes a village. It really does take a village. I'm a firm believer of that. And so for me, honestly, it really is just a blessing to be a part of all of the villages that we are a part of, to raise these kids, you know, in the community that we work in, and to foster our youth and just to help them lead successful lives. It's a blessing. So I'm grateful and I'm thankful to have the chance to work in the capacity that I do.
Well, many blessings to you. Hollenbeck Police Activities League, I thank you so much for coming down to be on the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for your time.
Yes. We appreciate it.
I told you it'd be fun, didn't I?
Oh, it's very
exciting. And I'd like to thank our producer, Oscar Flores, here on the controls, and DJ Reaper, who leaves us with this closing music.